morning. Bring greetings to each one in Jesus' name. This morning, I would like to share a message on relationships, particularly within the brotherhood. This was something that shared recently with the home congregation. It's a burden I have. Probably one of the things that I feel as I go through this is how often I fail. We believe the Bible, we believe the whole Bible, and we hold the Bible up as our standard of practice, our standard, what we base our lives on. And the Bible has some very clear directives for relationships. How we speak, how we interact with each other. But it seems like for all our correctness in Bible practice, we often skim lightly over some of these areas that deal with relationships. The thoughts from the devotion about the fear of God. And the fear of God, a proper fear of God, is really the key to our relationships, as it is to all other areas of life. If you would turn to Galatians chapter 6. You don't have to turn there. I'm just going to read one verse for now. Verse 14 says, "But God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world." Maybe the message is as much about humility and surrendering my own will as it is about anything else. I'd like to begin thinking about our speech, and I know this is very basic and maybe we know all there is to know about it. Colossians 4, verse 6. As we think about speech and how we communicate, apply that to the relationships within a brotherhood especially. How do I talk to others? And how do I talk about others? Those two thoughts. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man." There's two words there, two thoughts. Thought of grace. What does that mean, that our speech be always with grace? And thinking to apply that in our everyday lives. But I think of gentleness. I think of giving others the benefit of the doubt. Being careful. How do I talk to others? How do I talk about others? Mentions being seasoned with salt. And I would like to apply that two different ways. Salt makes you thirsty. You eat something salty, you get thirsty. Does our speech make other people thirsty for God? Does it make other people thirsty to know God, to know what drives our relationship with Him? Salt also is a preservative. So is our speech preserving? Does it have a preserving effect on our relationships, on others' Christian lives? We need to be honest. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 says, "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another." If you would go back to verse 15, it says, "But speaking the truth in love." Now, truthfulness is essential when it comes to relationships and our speech. I have never experienced this. I've had others tell me. But a rumor came around of what someone had said, and so they went to track it down. And when they got back to the source, the person said, "No, I never said that about you." Speaking the truth. If we said it, own up to it. Sometimes I wonder if we defend what we say. We say, "Well, it is the truth." Was it said in love? I think sometimes we emphasize the truth of what we say and not the spirit with which we said it. Should we be trying to share truth with someone that we don't love? I'd like to read a few verses from James chapter 3. Read verses 8 through 11. "But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter?" And we could read on, there's more comparisons. It says the tongue can no man tame. It is an evil, full of deadly poison. I'd like to think about gossip a little bit. Now, what is gossip? I think gossip occurs when we talk to the wrong person about the wrong thing. Do our children hear us speak negatively of other people, whether in the church or just neighbors, whatever? Do our children hear us speak negatively in a derogatory way about others? And then we wonder why they have relationship problems when they get bigger. I really think that one of the best ways to help our children is to not let them hear us speak negatively about others. We know that our tongue can only be tamed as it is directed by the Spirit of God. Matthew 5:37 says, "Let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil." And this is given in the context of swearing oaths. But I believe that there is a thought there that we can apply to not saying more than we should. We don't have to say everything we know. We don't have to say everything we hear. Titus 2, verse 8. This is addressed to young men, telling them to be an example. "Sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." Sound speech. Okay, I would like to leave the thought of speech. How do I view my brother? How do I, when I look at my brother, sister, how do I view them? Let's turn to 1 John chapter 2. Verses 8 to 11. "Again, a new commandment I write unto you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is past and the true light now shineth. He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness, even until now. He that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness, and walketh in darkness, and knoweth not whither he goeth, because the darkness hath blinded his eyes." The Apostle John is very clear. Love and hate, and I do not find the word tolerate in these verses. If we hate our brother, if we do not love our brother, we are in darkness. Turn to chapter 4, verse 19. "We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God, whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God, love his brother also." We would go up to verse 16 in chapter 4. It says, "God is love." And recently I came across the thought that as followers of Christ, we often speak of showing love, but we are to be love. As followers of Christ, we are to be love. Not to lift ourselves up to the level of God, because we will never attain that. But we need to be love. Again, how do I view my brother? Philippians chapter 2. We could spend a lot of time here. Just want to read verse 3 though. "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves." I think this verse is probably one of the hardest verses in our relationships. And I realize that when this verse is hard, it speaks of pride in my heart. I realize that we need to make choices for our lives, for our families, about principles and applications, and sometimes they differ from other people's. As you think of a brotherhood, you think of that person beside you. How do you value them? Not sure, maybe it's not fair to try to separate how the differences in belief. But how do I value them as a person? Do I esteem them more important than myself? As we look at the church, as we look at the kingdom of God, do I feel that they are more important here than what I am? Am I willing to lay down my feelings and how I would like to do it? Because I esteem my brother better than myself. 1 Corinthians 10. Verses 31 to 33. Wherefore, whether ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Do I seek my brother's profit or my own profit? It applies to the to business, to finances, but it's really deeper than that. Is my goal to help my brother, to lift him up? I'd also like to look at Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. I'd just like to look at two words there. The first one is provoke. We often think of provoking in a negative sense. You provoke someone to anger. Here it says to provoke to love and good works. To stir up or to stimulate. Is my life an encouragement to my brother to press on? As I said before in our speech, does it make them thirsty for God? Verse 25, we have exhorting, to warn, to urge on, to encourage. If you would turn to Matthew chapter 7 now. Read the first five verses. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. There is from what I've read, I don't know exactly, but they've put a break between verses 2 and 3. So when it talks about judging, it speaks of an improper judging, a hardness. And then verses 3 through 5 would speak more of maybe a legitimate concern we have and how we go about that. How often, in the heat of a disagreement, have we heard someone talk about the beam that's in their eye? As the disagreement's going on, they say, "Well, yeah, I know I have this big problem in my own life." How often does that happen? You know, the things that bother me most in the next individual are usually the things that I have a problem with in my own life. James 4:11 says, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge." God is the judge. It's not our responsibility. Romans 14:10, "But why dost thou judge thy brother? Or why dost thou set it not thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ." I would like to hold that up, that thought of judging up, in contrast with 1 Peter 5:5. It says, "Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble." How does the thought of being in subjection, of submitting myself to another, how does that mesh with the thought of judging? Do those two ideas go together? I don't believe they do. The rest of the time here, I'd like to focus now on principles for sharing a concern with a brother. And I realize that situations are different, and you know, if it's our best friend that we have a very close relationship with, maybe some of these principles are a little overdone. Maybe we can minimize some of these steps in sharing those concerns and going about that. But I think that often when we face struggles in our relationships, a lot of it comes back to the way we think and the way we go about these things. I'd like to begin in Galatians chapter 6. Then we'll look at Matthew 18 as well. Maybe you youth think that some of these things are kind of above you. It's for the old, it's for the preachers, or at least those over 40 or 50. There's not a lot of difference between 18 and 25 or 18 and 30 when it comes right down to it. It goes pretty fast. And I remember the first time that I had to share something with a brother. I wasn't married yet. It was probably 24 or 25. I had observed something that I would have been glad to have not observed. And I felt that as a brother in the church, I needed to talk to the other brother about it. We don't do these things lightly. I'm going to refer to Matthew 18, verse 15. It uses the word trespass. If thy brother trespass against thee. In Galatians chapter 6, it says, if a man be overtaken in a fault. And I'm going to take those two words, and I would like to broaden them out a little bit. And I would just like to take that and just cover whether we see our brother have a serious moral problem, whether our brother doesn't get along good with us, just in our interpersonal speaking, and whether it's just a problem between me and my brother and in the way we relate, or whether it's a serious moral issue. I'd like to just kind of lump those all together, and I realize maybe that's not entirely fair, but I think the principles still apply. It can be as simple as seeing, feeling my brother has a need in some area of his application. Maybe that's the most important time to follow some of these guidelines. I'll just read Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. I'll read verse 2 with that. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now the first step in going to a brother is my heart must be right. And we could have read verse 3 there in Galatians 6 as well. It talks about humility. If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. A need for humility. And that is the first point I have under having a right heart. You know, humility is a proper view of myself in relation to God. It's not how I rate against the brother over here, but it's in my relation with God, proper view of myself. You know, it takes humility to admit when I'm wrong. And Matthew chapter 5, speaking there about relationships, verse 23 and 24, therefore if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way, first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Our relationships need to be correct before we can worship. And you could go to Psalm 51, and the end of that psalm speaks of that. But I have to humble myself. And imagine if we'd come to church this morning and we'd sit down, or maybe we'd get up to lead the singing or preach the sermon. We'd say, well, just hang on. I got to go talk to Brother so-and-so and make something right. But that's what this is saying. And we can't worship until our relationships with each other are right. And that takes a lot of humility. I need to be honest with myself and my motives. It's not my job to just go and set my brother straight. Why do I feel a need to speak to him about it? What are my motives? I need to remember that I have a perspective and an opinion, and also that I tend to have tunnel vision. Again, my heart must be right. The next step is to spend time in prayer and fasting. And Matthew 17:21, Jesus speaking of casting out an evil spirit, I believe it was, said, "Howbeit this kind cometh not out but by prayer and fasting." And in our relationships, the best way to help those relationships is to spend time in prayer and fasting. And I have been amazed how often that kind of takes care of the problem. And it seems like God can often, once we get on our knees and really pray and fast for an individual, God often takes care of that before we ever get there. I'm not saying it always, but we need to start here. If I don't care enough to spend the time in prayer, to spend time fasting for my brother, before I go and share a concern, I really question how much love there is behind that concern. The next step is to remember the goal. Why am I talking to my brother? Why am I sharing the concern with him? Galatians 6 says, to restore. That's the goal. The restoration of our brother, of the relationship. Matthew chapter 18, verse 15 says, thou hast gained thy brother. If he hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. That's the goal, to gain our brother. The goal is to be reconciled. Do you truly desire to have a good relationship with your brother? Do you really want a close, God-honoring relationship? Or am I just looking for a chance to tell my side of the story? Or a chance to tell someone else what's wrong, what they're doing wrong? If I desire, if my flesh is ready to go talk to someone, if I want to go share my concern, really need to sit down and reevaluate the motive behind it. It's right that we desire to have a relationship restored. That's right. But if I just want to go share that concern really bad, I think we need to reevaluate the motives. In my small experience, I have never felt like going. Not been something I wanted to do. Matthew 18, verse 15 has our next point. It says to go alone. It says, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. You know, if we are going in a spirit of humility. We don't need moral support. 1 John says, perfect love casts out fear. We talked about how love is so important in our relationships. If we're going in the spirit of love, love casts out fear. We need to ask, not tell. It is in each one of our hearts to have everything figured out before we get there. We become the judge, the jury, and the executioner, all in one. That's our human tendency. And sometimes we are mistaken. It's all right to share observations, but understand that you didn't see everything. Again, we talked about sharing the truth in love. I think there's a time to tell the truth or share truth, but be very careful that we listen. Another thought on going alone. You don't need to tell anyone else. It says, tell him his fault between thee and him alone. That's the first step. You know, sometimes we talk to someone else under the guise of asking advice. Well, I need to talk to someone, see if it's all right if I go talk to this brother. What does he think about it? I wouldn't say there's never, ever a time for that. But I think many times it will work against the thought of restoration, against the thought of building that relationship back. Even though we may tell ourselves otherwise, it's often driven by a wrong motive if we feel a need to talk about it to someone else. Maybe we use this excuse of just unloading, or we have to tell somebody. If we need to unload, the best place to do that is on your knees. Someone recently shared a few difficult experiences they had had. And as he was telling that, he told me, he said, I would be willing to say these things if the other people involved were sitting here on either side of me. It's a pretty good test. Can we say things that we would only say in the presence of the person we're talking about? I realize that as married couples, we tend to share things. And I think that's probably all right. But I would just encourage that maybe you need to be willing. My wife and I, we kind of laugh about it, but often if I am upset at someone or something, she'll defend. And if she's the one that's upset, I'll defend. And it doesn't, you know, in a way it creates conflict, but on the other hand, it keeps us balanced. And if we both just jumped on and said, yep, that person's so wrong and terrible, bad attitudes start a lot easier. But I think it's good if husbands and wives, if you can help each other keep a right perspective. Verse 16 in Matthew 18 says, if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. Here again, I would encourage that don't take your best friend with you. Why don't you take the other person's best friend? At least take someone who is mature and someone who is more concerned about reconciliation than they are about a certain point of view. If it's still not received, verse 17 says to take it to the church. There's a lot of steps before it gets taken to the church or another brother. Let's remember that. One of the deepest concerns I have is that we often don't talk, is that we do talk to the wrong people. You know, I don't need to go talk to Brother Gus about Brother Ralph's bad attitude. Brother Gus doesn't have anything to do with that, does he? I need to go talk to Brother Ralph. But so often, it's easier to talk to Brother Gus about it, so I talk to Brother Gus, and that's as far as it goes. If you feel that Brother Amos isn't following the church guidelines that we have agreed on, I think Brother Amos is the first person we need to talk to, not the ministry. And maybe there's a time to share our concerns with the ministry, but I think it's after we've shared that personal concern with Brother Amos. Just quickly, how should we respond when someone shares a concern with us? And I don't know, I thought maybe I should have spent more of the time on this. We need to respond meekly, humbly. We need to thank God that there are people that care enough about me that they would come share a concern. It's not easy to go talk to a brother or a sister. Look at things honestly and remember that in all criticism there is an element of truth. Even if you feel it was given in the wrong spirit, there's usually some truth in it. We need to pray. We need to read the Word of God. God has the answers. One more verse. So we think about our relationships. Think about loving each other. We have two more verses. Thinking of John chapter 15. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life, the life of his friends. Romans 14:19, let us therefore follow after things which make for peace, and the things wherewith one may edify another. Again, to edify each other, to be reconciled to each other, that should be our goal.